Thank you for listening to Torah Media Atlanta. Won't you consider making a donation to help support this important work? Just go to TorahMediaAtlanta.com and click on the donate link. Thank you very much.
Okay, let's pick up with our story. So where we are up to, we are up to the blessing that Esav is finally going to receive. He's come in. What we did last week is we went through his pleading, the yearning in his voice, the begging his father, please, Father. He kept saying the word Father. One last blessing. Don't you have something indeed for me? And we read Vayisa Esav Kolo Vayevk at the end of verse 38 on the top of page 301. He raised up his voice and he wept. And you have this picture here of Esav, who we don't view in Jewish history with a positive light, but this man who is now weeping, crying, begging and pleading with his father for that blessing. I mentioned, I think it was last week, that the sages do indeed connect the tears of Esav with the problems that will eventually befall the Jewish people in the times of the Purim story. The same language of Mordechai going out to the streets in sackcloth and raising his voice and in crying is the same exact language of what we find here by Esav, and the sages connect it as being done purposely to show that the pain that we caused to Esav here through Yaakov's swiping these blessings eventually came back to haunt the Jewish people. And that's a discussion that a separate discussion of, well, if what he did was right, then why are we punished for it? But the bottom line is sometimes when you cause pain to somebody, there are ramifications for it. And here we have Esav crying. Okay, let's get to the actual blessings and see if we could finish up the rest of the story today. Vayan, I'm in verse 39 on page 301. Vayan Yitzchak, in the white sheets. Vayan Yitzchak, Aviv Vayomer Elov. So Yitzchak says to his son Esav and says, Hinei Mishmonei Ha'oretz Yihyeh Moishavecha. Here is the blessing that he's finally going to give his son Esav. He says, of the fatness of the earth shall be your dwelling, and from the dew of the heavens from above. Let's just read the whole thing, then we'll go back. It's a two-verse blessing. Pasuk 40, Mem. Ve'alchar b'cha tichye, by your sword you shall live. Ves achicha ta'avod, and your brother you will serve. V'haya kasher tarid, however it shall be that when he will either lower, or we'll see Rashi will translate, be aggrieved, Ufarakta ulo me'al tzavarecha, you will remove his yoke from upon your neck. Let's go over that. Here we have, here are the two. So now Esav has been pleading and begging his father for a blessing. Finally gets it, and let's go over the different components of the blessing. What are the components of the first pasuk? Pasuk Lamed Tes, 39. Right, so it's a very physical blessing of bounty, very similar if you go flip back to the blessing that Yaakov receives when he's pretending to be Esav. If you recall, if you flip back a page, again, going back a page is going the other way than it seems. Remember, going backwards is flipping back from your left side. On page 296, you just keep your finger there. Sorry, this is going to be a little bit confusing. That's how it goes. On page 296, the blessing in verse 28, which begins to Yaakov, and again, this is when his father thought that he was really Esav, but the blessing that goes to Yaakov is, may God give you of the dew of the heavens and of the fatness of the earth and abundant grain and wine. So if we now compare this to the blessing that Esav gets, what similarities and what differences do we have?
They're reversed.
Well, he left out the grain and wine.
Okay, a bunch of two things you both said accurately. Number one, when he actually now gives the blessing to Esav, he leaves out the abundant grain and wine, that which was added to Yaakov, that not only will you have the fatness of the earth and the dew of the heavens, you'll also have abundant grain and wine. Esav does not get that. All he gets is dew and fatness. And as Zina pointed out, the order is reversed. To Yaakov in verse 28, we start with the dew of the heavens and the fatness of the earth. And to Esav, we have the fatness of the earth shall be your dwelling and the dew of the heavens from above. There's one other significant difference which was already pointed out by Rashi. Verse 20 is on page 296.
People serve you.
Just in that first verse. What about the name of God? Right, what's in English also? In verse 28, the verse says, and may God give you of the dew of the heavens. And when the blessing originally goes to Yaakov, who is disguised as Esav, it's may God give you those blessings. And now when he speaks to Esav, it's just may your dwelling be in the fatness and in the dew of the heaven, so that there's no reference specifically to God in any of those components. One second, I have another sheet here. Here I have one, another set of rations. Just make sure I'm giving you the right one. Yeah. Yes.
In continuing with that, it says, "By your sword shall you live."
That's the second. We haven't gotten to that yet.
Sorry. But I was thinking it goes along with the motif of God not being so clear, seen so clearly in his life.
Okay, if you remember what Rashi said about this, Rashi said that when Yaakov gets the bracha, it's with the word, may God give it to you, because you're only going to get it if you deserve it. But the blessing that the Jewish people are given is a blessing of when you merit it, when you earn it, when you do the right thing, then you'll get it, because Jews know how to respond when they don't get blessings. They know that when they don't get the blessings that they need, they say, because of us. The non-Jewish world, Rashi quoted, when they don't get the things that they need, they say, you don't know what you're doing. They say, you don't have the ability to. So that, therefore, we learned from here, and Rashi pointed out that this was mimicked when King Solomon, when Shlomo HaMelech established the Beis HaMikdash, in his tefillah as well, when he gave the blessings to the Jewish people that they should be prosperous, it was when they merited that God should bestow his blessings upon them. And to the non-Jews, he just said, just give it to them whenever. Like, you don't want to get involved in them because they're just going to end up blaspheming you anyway. So just give it to them and disregard their behavior as far as that goes. Okay. So again, part one of the blessing, back to page 301. Part one of the blessing to Esav now is a physical prosperity of fatness of the earth and the dew of the heavens. And what about the second verse, verse 40? By your sword you shall live, but your brother you shall serve. Yet it shall be that when you will be aggrieved, you may remove his yoke from upon your neck. What are the ideas? What do we get here?
So, your brother you shall serve, and here it says, makes him sorry that he is serving him, then he can stop.
Okay, so that really comes at the back. In other words, how does the verse start? The second part of this verse, you have your physical prosperity of fatness and dew, and then you have by your sword you shall live. So what do you think that means? We're going to see here, Rashi, what does it mean by this? By your sword you shall live.
That he's been a hunter. He's not, God isn't really mentioned here. He's going to have to go out and do the work himself. Here's your sword. Go out, kill things, eat things. He'll be fine.
Okay, so we'll see an idea certainly of living by the sword. Now we'll see whether or not there's an element of like war as well. Certainly the sword has a connotation of that. So Esav is giving a blessing of prosperity, fatness and dew. Then he's told to live by the sword. And then what's he told? Even though you live by your sword, which would imply what? What does it imply to tell somebody you live by his sword?
They're in charge.
Dominance. Exactly. Strength. Because if you tell somebody you're going to live by your sword, I would think that that would imply power and dominance. So he says, but even though I'm blessing you, you'll live by your sword, you're going to serve your brother. Because that was a blessing that was already given to Yaakov, that his brothers will serve him. So now as he says to the older brother, to Esav, you might live by your sword, but you need to know you're going to be serving your brother. And then he throws in a last line, which is the story of all of Jewish history encompassed in this line. That it will be that if you will be aggrieved, we'll have to understand, we'll see Rashi about how they understand this. Something. Somehow if you'll be aggrieved, or the literal translation is Kasher Torid, when he like lowers.
That's what I was wondering, because in Hebrew it doesn't say that at all. It says Torid when he lowers. So you could say when Bnei Yisrael is lowered and more.
Yes, we will see that. When the Jewish people are lowered, or we see where it comes from the word aggrieved, there's some tanai, there's some condition here that when the Jewish people do something, Ufarakta ulo me'al tzavarecha, you will remove his yoke from upon your neck. So that we have here in the blessing to Esav, fatness and dew, very nice. You'll live by your sword, which would seem to be a dominance, but you're going to serve your brother. But he tells his son Esav, if Yaakov does something, well, we'll see in Rashi and Rabban exactly how to translate what he's saying, you will have the ability to throw off the yoke of his burden from your neck. So that there's a relationship of Yaakov being dominant over Esav, but that contingent upon Yaakov's behavior, an ability for Esav to remove that yoke and do what he wants. Which again, from the Jewish perspective, is always, and we, for those of you who did the Tanakh course like 2 years ago, when all the travails that befall the Jewish people are always in a way like, it's not, the problem is not out there, the problem is always in here, always. Tanakh always speaks that way. The Jewish people didn't listen to the word of God, so God sent upon them the Philistines. The Philistines are the problem. It's God sent them because of something. And here you have Esav is going to be our eternal sibling rivalry. And the bracha that Esav is given is, you're going to live by your sword, but you're going to be subject to your brother. Except, if he does something, you can remove that yoke and you'll be free to do what you want. Let's take a look and see how Rashi and Ramban learn these brachas. Okay, let's start with verse 39. In Rashi, page 301. Mishmane ha'aretz, from the fatness of the earth, Rashi says, U'atalia shel Yavon. This is Italy of Greece, in which, you know, Rashi here is quoting some of the more prosperous lands that Esav will eventually inhabit. And specifically Italy, as we mentioned, what's referred to as Rome and the Roman exile are all descendants from Esav, from Edom. And therefore Rashi connects the fatness of the earth to the land of Rome that Esav and his descendants will eventually inhabit. And you will live literally upon your sword, says Rashi, meaning as by your sword. He gets into some grammar for a second. Look at the next piece. Tarid, meaning it shall be that when you will be aggrieved. Lashon tsar. Rashi says, even though the word literally means be lowered, Rashi says, it means pain. It's an expression of pain. And he quotes other places throughout Tanakh, where the word arid is a reflection of pain in my speech, as if to say, four lines from the bottom, this is a key point in Rashi that we need to see. Yitzchok means to say, Kishiyavru Yisrael al HaTorah, when Israel will transgress the laws of the Torah, V'yiyelucha pischon peh, then you will have a claim, Lihitzta'er, to be aggrieved over the blessings that Yaakov took, and you will remove his yoke from your neck. Now, I just want to stress how Rashi is reading this phrase. The phrase reads, when you will be aggrieved, you will remove his yoke. Rashi says what that means is, when he removes the yoke of Torah from his neck, you will be aggrieved over the fact that he stole the blessing. Meaning, Rashi is not reading this that when the Jewish people aggrieve the people of Esav, that when the Jews mistreat Edom, that then they will say, hey, you're aggrieving me, I will now remove your yoke that has been placed upon me by Yitzchak and do with it you want. Now, that sounds, yeah, very often you find this in a pasuk in which you have to like read ideas into the words. It's that when you will be aggrieved over this blessing that was stolen from you, and when will you be allowed to be aggrieved over the blessing that was stolen from you? When the Jewish people don't observe the laws of the Torah, then you'll be able to remove his yoke. We're going to see the Ramban is going to read this differently. Well, Rashi's reading it as, when the Jews are not observing the laws of the Torah, Esav will be able to have a claim of, you stole my birthright. You stole my blessings. So that, it's a very interesting dynamic that Rashi's reading it as, because we have nothing to do with Edom. We're not harming them, we're not bothering them, and doing anything to them. But when we're not doing what we need to God, they're going to be angry at us, not for what we're doing to them now, but for what happened. And Esav will always have that claim. We've discussed this a lot, in terms of Esav feels cheated. And he's going to continue to feel cheated in his rationalism, and he's going to kick up a problem with us. He's going to start up with us because of this. What's going to allow him to do so? When they're not keeping the laws of the Torah, then all of these things are going to fall apart. The blessings of the Jews get fall apart, and then Esav is going to attack. That's how Rashi is going to do. We'll see again in a moment that the Ramban is going to read it a little bit differently, but that is how Rashi reads it. So far, so good? Let's take a look at how the Ramban does it. See your blue sheets page, bottom page 63. Okay, and we're going to start from verse 39, the bottom of page 63 in your blue sheets again. Ramban here is dealing with the first of the two blessings, the first two verses of the blessings. The fatness of the earth shall be your dwelling. So the Ramban explains the implication of the hine and behold. Why does it say that? Meaning the purpose of the word hine, behold, is to imply, behold, I am able to give you the fatness of the earth and of the dew of the heavens. Flipping over to page 64. Though I have already given them to Yaakov, because there is enough of these for both of you to have the fatness of the land and the dew of the heavens. Meaning, Ramban is explaining, why is there a word vihine? And behold, you'll have the fatness and the dew. Says Ramban, because you should be bothered by, you the reader, didn't he just give his blessing to Yaakov? Didn't he just say to Yaakov that you have the fatness of the earth and the dew of the heavens? How can he give the same blessing to Esau? He just gave that bracha. So Ramban says, that's a vihine. Behold, of fatness and of dew, I got plenty to go around. When it comes to material blessings, don't worry about it. I'll give you both. Yes, I gave Yaakov the fatness and the dew. I'll give that to you as well. However, concerning rulership, the back half of Yaakov's blessing that said, you will rule over the world and over your brothers and they'll all prostrate themselves to you, on that, which cannot be shared, it will all be his and you shall serve him. He also did not give him a blessing of abundance of grain and wine, which he did to his brother, because he wanted to honor the son that he had blessed first, meaning Yaakov, by granting him one aspect of blessing beyond that which he had blessed, the second. Now, the Ramban does not address here the flipping of the order of the dew and the fatness, but what he addresses is the fact that they're both giving the same blessing is not a problem, he says. There's abundant fatness of the earth and dew of the heavens for both. But what you do notice is that Esav is not given abundant grain and wine, somebody here pointed out. Says Ramban, it's because Yitzchak specifically wanted to give additional blessings to the son that received the first blessing. So he leaves out the abundant grain and wine. And he also doesn't mention anything about serving, because that was already given wholly to Yaakov, and therefore this other brother, Esav, will be subservient to Yaakov. Going down to the last paragraph there, and after this he says to Yaakov, meaning to Yaakov, he said, may he grant you the blessings of Abraham, that you possess the land of your sojourns, which was the blessing we haven't gotten to that yet. That's when he sends Yaakov away to his uncle Laban. He says, then he gives him the bracha of Abraham, that he should have the promised abundance of grain and wine in the land of Canaan, whereas for Esav there would be dew and fatness of the land, but in a different land, it would be somewhere else. Okay, we'll leave that aside for now. Okay. Now, what was the second half, the back half of the bracha that's given to Esav? That he'll dwell by the sword, but that he'll serve his brother, unless his brother does something, at which point you can throw off his yoke. Says in the bottom of page 64, the meaning of on your sword, that you shall live, means by the means of your sword. Meaning through your ability to work your sword will you live. And now he explains what that means on the top of page 65. What does that mean, that by the means of your sword you will live, says the Ramban? The blessing of living by means of the sword was not that Esav's sustenance should be obtained through spoils taken from his enemies by his sword. Doesn't mean that you'll only survive through war. Doesn't mean that you'll be constantly at war and therefore taking spoils from your enemies in order to survive, for he had, after all, given him the fatness of the earth and of the dew of the heavens. And he could easily obtain his sustenance through them. So what does it mean that you'll live through your sword? If it doesn't mean that you'll only be able to take spoils through war, because it just gave me fatness and dew. By fatness and dew, I don't need to go to war. So what does it mean that I'll live by my sword? Says Ramban, rather the idea of the blessing is to say that Esav would live through all his wars, meaning that he would be victorious and would not fall by the sword of his enemy, meaning he would successfully defend himself. And this is why he said, but your brother you shall serve, meaning that you will not overpower him, rather he will overpower you. Meaning, Ramban puts together the first part of the bracha, you'll receive fatness and dew, but your sword will always be able to protect you. You will never be subjugated to your enemies through war, because you'll always be strong enough to fend them off, despite the fact that you'll be subservient to Yaakov. So your brother you shall serve, but no other nation. The other nations might try, and you, Edom, will be able to outmaneuver them. You'll be stronger than them. You'll be able to maintain that power. But to Yaakov, you will have to serve. So far, so good? Continues. What is that word, tarid? Now, the word tarid, again, is the word that says, but if your brother will tarid, if he will literally lower, then you can remove his yoke. So this is a key word. What does that mean that Yaakov does? That when he does that, then you'll be able to remove this burden of having to serve as a Rashi. Again, we saw it said, it meant when they remove from themselves the burden of Torah, then you will be aggrieved, because in Rashi translates the word as aggrieved. What does the word tarid mean? It doesn't mean lower, it means aggrieved. When they remove the yoke of Torah, you'll be aggrieved. And what will you be aggrieved over? This blessing that you were just swindled out of, and then you'll be able to remove his yoke. That's how Rashi read the word. So Ramban is going to give us some of the give us his opinion on that. Yet it shall be, middle of page 65, yet it shall be that when you cry sorrowfully in prayer due to the provocation of Yaakov's hand, you may cast off his yoke from upon your neck. What does the word tarid mean? To lower, meaning literally lower cries in your sorrowful prayer. So it's a reference to Esav. When you cry out, not the way Rashi learns it, meaning when Rashi learns it as when he removes himself from Torah and you feel aggrieved over the blessings, you can remove your yoke. Ramban says to Esav, when you cry out in prayer, when you are sorrowful in your prayer, then you'll be able to remove his yoke. Why would Esav cry out in sorrowful prayer? Let's continue, says the Ramban. This is an allusion to Israel, bidding them that they should not overly provoke Esav's offspring and do them harm. This is a warning to the Jewish people. If you cause Esav to cry, if you cause them despair, when he releases the tears of sorrow from himself, he'll be able to remove your yoke of rulership over him. Continues the Ramban. This is in line with that which the Torah later commands. V'nishmartem me'od al tisgaru bam. Be very careful, do not provoke them. Jewish people had many run-ins with Edom as they wanted to travel through the lands, wanted to cross through their borders, and Hashem says, don't provoke the people of Edom. Says the Ramban, that's a follow-up 40 years later, many generations later, after 40 years in the desert, traveling through, when Hashem says to Moshe, do not provoke the people of Edom. Says Ramban, that's rooted in this blessing that Yitzchak says to his son Esav, "Kasher tarid," meaning when you let sorrowful tears come out of your eyes, you'll be able to remove his yoke. Continues the Ramban. Sages mention this as well. Amru, they said, "Kisheshes chadoshim yoshev shem Yoav." For 6 months, Yoav and all of Israel stayed until they had destroyed every male in Edom. A pasuk from the Sefer Malach in the Book of Kings. So the Novi describes that Yoav and the Jewish army spent time there eradicating the people of Edom, people of Esav. And the Holy One, Amar Lo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, said, Ani amarti al tizgaru bam, I told you in the Torah already not to provoke these people, and yet you have provoked them. Therefore I swear, Chayecha, that these 6 months shall not be counted for you and for your reign. And we see this because it was written, the days that David reigned over Israel were 40 years, while in fact he reigned 6 months more than that. As it's written, he ruled over Yehuda for 7 years and 6 months, and Yerushalayim he ruled for 33 years. A total of 6 months more than the 40 years. Sages also said in the Medrash, the Holy One, blessed is he, said to him, David, your hands are sharp and spiked, meaning they're formidable weapons, capable of defeating Edom, but I wish to subjugate my world through them, and I cannot allow you to defeat them now. Says the Ramban, quoting from Midrashim, Edom has a purpose, the world is supposed to be subjugated through Edom. I would not be so bold as to say that our modern day Western civilization is the formulation of Edom, and therefore that they need to be, they have a role. But it's interesting, but I'm not going to say that. But says the Medrash, the people of Edom, the descendants of Esav, have a role there in subjugating the world, running the world, being a powerful force. You may not instigate or subjugate them. And if you do, he will indeed take off his yoke from you. It's a very interesting concept of You know, we're going to get to this in Mr. Shem. I'd like to go back to it. You know, when I spoke Shavuos night, we tied a lot of these things together. We've been raising a lot of questions. We're going to go back and answer them soon. But one of the ideas that we're going to see is this concept of what should have been or could have been a partnership between Yaakov and Esav. The idea of Yaakov focused on the Beis HaMedrash, on learning and davening, and Esav focused on all the activities that are required for the fulfillment of a world, of a society, of a culture outside of the Beis HaMedrash. And Esav wasn't interested. But that's still who he is. And you see here that Hashem tells the Jewish people here through Yitzchak's bracha, don't start up with them. He will subjugate himself to you. He will serve you. But if you start up with him, then he'll remove that yoke from you. Because there's a certain balance that needs to be. He will subject him. He will be a servant to you. But when you go too far, so then he will remove his that yoke from upon his neck, and then he'll be free reign. And it's just interesting, you know, as we read these psukim that were said from Yitzchak to Yaakov and Esav, and then, you know, historically what's taking place, just over the centuries. But that's how the Ramban understands his blessing. So just to summarize, Rashi understands it as it's all within the Jewish people. When you disregard the Torah, he will be aggrieved over this swiping of the blessings, and he'll remove the yoke from upon his neck. The Ramban says, When you, the Jewish people, cause Esav to tarit, to cry in sorrowful mourning, because you aggrieve them, then he'll be able to remove that yoke and start off with you. Don't do it. Okay, that's the blessing to Esav, as far as Rashi and Ramban goes. Let's finish up the story, and then I'm deciding whether or not we're going to go to Rav Hirsch first, or we'll tie in some of the ideas that we spoke about over Shavuos night. I think this would be an appropriate time to do it, and then we'll do it first. But let's go back to Rashi sheets. Let's finish up the story. That's the end of the blessing. So now we've just completed the, you know, Yaakov comes in, he gets his blessing. Esav comes in, he takes his. And now the Torah describes in Mem Aleph in 41 on the bottom of page 301 on your white sheets. Vayistom Esav as Yaakov al habrocho. Esav harbored hatred towards Yaakov because of the blessings Asher bircho aviv, that his father had blessed him. Esav said to himself, Yikrivu yimei evel avi, the days of mourning for my father will come close, will draw near. Va'ahargo es Yaakov achi, and I will kill my brother Yaakov. If you remember from the very beginning of this story, Yitzchak said, behold, I'm old, I don't know of the day of my death, let me give you this blessing. Now Esav ties that back to the end of the story, in which he does not get the blessing that he thought he was going to get. Instead, he gets servitude to his brother Yaakov. He hates Yaakov because of that, and he says, shortly my father will die, and then I will kill my brother Yaakov. And again, there is one thing that we see here, which we've seen prior, and that is the relationship that Esav does indeed have to his father Yitzchak, and the mitzvah of Kibbur Av Va'Em. That you would think at this point, where there's nothing left, I mean, he has no blessings left to give me, I got all that I can out of him, he would have easily have said something along the lines of, right, who cares about my father? I hate my brother, I want to kill him. I've nothing left to get from my father. And even that, despite that he's now gotten all that he can from him and is not happy with it, you still find the idea in this way the Torah described Esav of, but I'm waiting till he dies. I'm not doing anything until my father is, while he's still here. As Rashi references this on the top of page 302, Rashi says, Yikrivu yimei evel avi, the days of mourning for my father will draw near. This is to be understood as it sounds, meaning that I should not cause my father any pain. I mean, the simple meaning is exactly as it says. That's what Esav was concerned with, not causing pain to his father. Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting because I had always sort of thought that Esav was just doing it just to, you know, fool's father, but he wasn't really that
right.
Sincere. But
you find when it comes to Kibbur Av Va'Em, we find, in other words, there are certain things that he did to fool his father, the questions that we heard him asking. There were other things, and there are many midrashic statements that really extol Esav specifically for bona fide Kibbur Av Va'Em. This would be one of those sources where the sages saw that. How did the sages know that it wasn't just not to fool him? Because you see, even here, at the end of the story, we've got nothing to gain,
right.
And it still is that way. Which is just parenthetically, is always the true testament to the way the person feels about something, is, you know, what happens when you can remove all of the personal agendas, all of that which you have to gain, then how do you treat or relate to whatever it is that we're talking about, then you can really isolate how, where a person's holding in life. Because in most areas in life, you can't ever isolate that. There always is personal benefit in whatever that's going on. And you might be the nicest guy in the world, but you also know that by your behaving in this manner, there's some ramification to that. If you could ever isolate that, then you see really that's a true person. Now life, generally, again, as I said, doesn't allow us to isolate it, and so we deal with people as we deal with them. We deal with ourselves as it's true. Life is complex, and every time I do A, there are ramifications to that which I'm aware of, and that might dictate why I'm being nice over here. That's true. And here you have a situation in which it's really isolated. It would seem that Asa really has nothing but nothing to gain from waiting. Blessings have been given. His father is clear that he's not changing it. He's got nothing else to do. And yet, you still find that I'm not doing anything until he dies, 100%. Vayugad l'Rivka es divrei Esav bina gadol, and it was told to Rivka the words of her son Esav, meaning he said it to himself, the Torah says. How does she know? So it says it was told to her. Rashi will comment, through the Holy Spirit, Baruch HaKodesh, it was told to her, that which Esav was contemplating in his heart. Vatishlach, and she sent, Vatikral Yaakov bina katon, she sent for her smaller, younger son, Vatomrei lov, and she said to him, Hinei Esav achicha misnachem l'cha l'hargecha. Behold, your brother Esav. Now, Rashi, the English is going to be one of Rashi's translations. A very difficult phrase. Misnachem is having second thoughts towards you to kill you. Now, there's a question on this pasuk which we've raised when we went through this the first time, which I'm going to raise again, although I have no answer for that. And that is why we refer to the brothers Yaakov and Esav as Bino Hakatan and Bino Hagadol, to her elder son and to her younger son. We are at the end of a very long story. We have been dealing with Yaakov and Esav in this story for some almost 40 psukim. So we know who the older son and who the younger son is, and why the Torah feels the need to stress that when Rivka calls her younger son to say what her older son is saying, why they're still defined with that younger son and older son is something that I do not know the answer to. Yes?
That they're both still her sons, and she's still a mother.
So I'm asking about the katan and gadol, the older and the younger. So let's say I'll grant you that it would say lebina Esau, that we call her son. It's the older and the younger that's still troubling me. But I like your thought.
They're not adults. One of them is 62. One of them. Yes, not to her. One of them is the younger son who needs protection.
Okay, you're picking up on what we stressed, that when she calls Yaakov the first time, she's very active and he's very passive. She directs him, take this from me, do this for me, puts the clothing on his neck, puts the clothing on his body, puts the food in his hands, and pushes him in, that there's still that sense of her younger son. Interesting, yeah.
Well, actually, it's not that she is calling him her older son, it's that it's written in the Torah.
Right, the narrative is that way, which is interesting. No, it's like the narrative, Atikrol Yaakov and Akatan. It's very interesting. Okay, let's do Rashi yesterday. Rashi says in 42, we did the first piece that it was told to Rivka through the Holy Spirit, the Ruach HaKodesh. Misnachem l'chaz, having second thoughts toward you, says Rashi, Nicham al ha'achla, meaning he's having second thoughts over the fact that you have a sibling relationship that exists. To consider a different thought, meaning that you have a foreign relationship in order to become estranged from you, ula hargecha, and to kill you. Which is a very fascinating insight, that the way that Rashi's interpreting the language of the Torah is saying, misnachem, he's planning. He uses a very strange word for that, he's planning to kill you, which Rashi interprets to mean he's having second thoughts about your relationship. And he needs to remove himself from the sibling relationship and change into a different type of relationship. And the beautiful insight that Rashi is saying, when one person commits an atrocity to another person, first, what you need to do is remove the nature of relationship. It can't be that this is my brother. How does a brother kill another brother? So first I need to be misnachem, I need to renege, I need to remove myself from that relationship of a brother, create a different foreign relationship, and then I can go ahead and do that. Very interesting insight, and I stress this because if you remember back from the binding of Isaac, Akedas Yitzchak, which we studied, on the way up the mountain, we had which we learned as one of the central conversations of the entire story, which is the only conversation between Yitzchak and Abraham. On the way up, Yitzchak says, Vayomer Yitzchak el Avraham Aviv, Vayomer Avi. Where he said to his father, Father. And Avraham says, Yes. Hineini bini. And then he says, I see the fire in the wood. Where's the kid? Who are we slaughtering? What are we slaughtering? And we study then that the first thing that Yitzchak says, he doesn't open with this question. The first thing he says is, Avi, father? And Avram answers, Hineni b'ni, I'm here, my son. And we stressed, this is one of David Foreman's central points in that story, if there was anything that Avram was trying to do on that walk up the mountain, it was remove the sense of fatherhood. I've just been commanded by God to slaughter my son. I don't get it. That doesn't make any sense. But how do I do that? So I need to remove that sense of relationship. And what does Yitzchak do? Right, Avi, father, and Avram's ability to answer, Hineni b'ni, I'm here, my son. That's what Rabbi Foreman learned. The central element of the test was to be able to say, Hineni b'ni, I'm here for you, my son, and Hineni to God, I'm ready to kill my son at the same time. That doesn't make any sense. I'm not going to do those two things at the same time. But the way that I'm going to listen to God is not by pushing you away and saying you're not my son. I'm going to somehow manage to hold you tight as my son as I take the word of God and do them both in a way that I don't know how it's going to happen. I don't understand it. And so here you have that same insight that Rashi says, even from Esav. What did Esav need to do to be able to plan to kill his brother? Remove himself from the relationship as a brother. Very interesting comment from Rashi. And a Gadik Medrash Rashi continues, interprets the phrase to mean, you are already dead in his eyes, and he has drunk over you a cup of consolation. The word misnachem is coming to the Tanchumim, like the nachem avelin, to comfort mourners. And so the Midrashic interpretation is, Esav is already drinking the cup of consolation because he can already taste the death in his mind. You're a dead man. Therefore, she says, you got to get out of here. That's the Midrashic interpretation. The simple interpretation, Rashi says, the lesson of Misnachem is in consolation. He's consoling himself over the loss of the blessings through killing you. That he's going to Misnachem Alacha, he's going to comfort himself over the fact that he lost all these blessings by taking you out. Because if he takes you out, then it's not going to bother him so much that he didn't get the blessings because you didn't either. Yaakov's not married at this time. He doesn't have any children. So if Esav succeeds in knocking off Yaakov, you know, poof, go the blessings. These are the only two boys, Yitzchak and Yaakov and Rachel. Yitzchak and Rivka, they don't have a family of 12. These are their two children. So Esau says, so the simple meaning of the pasuk is he's already comforting himself by knocking you out, and then he's not going to have to worry about the fact that he lost the blessings because you will not be getting them either. So that's what Rivka says to her son Yaakov. He says, I've heard that your brother is, whichever one of these interpretations, consoling himself by killing you, already viewing you as a dead man, or having second thoughts about your relationship because he's planning on killing you. However, we'll read that. You're in trouble, she says to her son, Yaakov. Atov ani shma v'koli, listen to my voice. Where do we see that before? Right, when he said, I can't do this, I'm going to get caught, I'm going to get cursed. She said, listen to me. You must get up and flee. El Lavan achi, to my brother Lavan, Charana, to the place of Charan. You go there, live with my brother in Charan. V'yashavta imo yamim achadim, you will live with him for many days. Ad asher tashuv chamas achicha, until your brother's wrath subsides. The Rivka says, now whether or not she understood that this was going to be a 20-year adventure or not, unclear. But she says, you can't be here. Your brother is enraged. I don't know when your father, my husband, is going to die. Whenever that happens, you know, look out. So it's not safe for you to be here. Therefore, you need to go away until your brother's anger subsides. Now, it's not clear to me whether or not, and Rashi does not comment, whether or not she thought that that would be a week, a month, a year. Unclear.
The English translation says for a few days.
Correct.
And isn't that Rashi, don't they usually follow Rashi?
Yes, and Rashi on the very bottom of the page, singles, you know what I mean, like a few days. Yeah. So it seems like she was thinking it was a short-term solution. Reading the next pasuk 45, continuing that thought, Shuv af achicha mimcha, until your brother's anger against you subsides, v'shachach eis asher asisalo, he forgets what you have done to him, v'shalachti ulakachticha misham, and I will send and bring you from there, Loma eshkol gam shneichem yom echad. Why should I be bereaved of both of you on the same day? Okay, let's take a look. We'll get to that last phrase in a moment. So clearly, a couple of points. Number one, it sounds like we're getting an insight into anger. How long does anger last? Sounds like a few days. And what causes anger to subside?
Not having the person around right there.
Possibly, but even more explicitly. She uses a very interesting language.
She says he forgets.
Forgets. Very interesting insight. The anger will subside when he forgets what you did. Now, whether or not part of that is getting out of sight, out of mind, or as long as you're there, it's going to be in his face, he'll remember. But if you can get the person to forget what you did, which happens naturally, we just forget things. Things which are, you know, emotional now become less so over time. It's the way that God created us. We view things that are emotionally arousing now. As time goes by, we don't necessarily forget that they happen, but we certainly forget the passion and the intensity of it. And so she says, go away for a little bit. When you're not around, he will forget what you've done, and I'll call, I'll bring you back. So that it sounds pretty clear that she intended that she would not die, nor would her husband Yitzchak die, before Yaakov returned. It would be a brief hiatus, a little vacation in Haran with her uncle, his uncle Lavan, Rivka's own brother, and eventually she'll call him back. Yeah.
She doesn't load Yaakov up with stuff, jewelry and gold, or things that it's going to appeal to Lavan.
No, she does not, right? Because when Yaakov shows up there, we're gonna find that he comes with nothing. He comes empty-handed, right? When he's going to meet his future wife Rachel at the well. Well, it's not really true. He cries because he has nothing. But the sages say that he was robbed by Esav's son Eliphaz.
Oh.
So it's not clear, you know, according to the sages, he took stuff. In other words, what the pasuk is going to describe is that he's going to come empty-handed. So a simple reading of the Chumash would be he left with nothing. The Chazal see that, you know, he left with stuff, it's just that it was taken from him along the way. Okay, let's see, what's that last phrase? What does it mean that she says to him, the reason why you need to go is that I should not be bereaved of both of you on the same day. What does that mean? Says Rashi, 45 on the top of page 303. Why should I be bereaved? I'll be bereaved of both of you. This teaches regarding one who buries his children, meaning one whose children died during his lifetime, that he is called bereaved. As Yaakov also says, I have been bereaved. What does it mean, Gam Shnei? Well, who's the two people? Rashi says, if he will rise up against you and you will kill him, then his friends will arise and kill you. So I'll be bereaved of both of you, in that if you defend yourself and kill him, then Esav will die, and then his sons will come and kill you. And the Holy Spirit was thrown into her, meaning where did she get this from? She would prophesy that indeed what would happen is they would both die on the same day, as is explained in the Midrashim, which I believe is a reference to the fact that when they were burying Yaakov, and they came from Egypt where Yaakov dies to the Maras HaMachpelah to bury him in the cave, Esav caused a whole big fuss that he really should be buried there, and one of Yaakov's grandchildren, the son of Dan, Chush, went and took off Esav's head right there at the front of the cave. So according to the Midrashim, it really wasn't the same day, because it took a while from the time that Esav died, but they were both buried on the same day. And she sort of was prophesizing about that when she said, why should I be bereaved of both of you on the same day? I have always thought, though I don't see it here in Rashi, I'd always thought on a simple level it was a reference to her husband Yitzchak and Yaakov, because what Esav had said was, when my father dies, then I'm going to knock out Yaakov. So that it would be an essence of, why should I be bereaved of both of you, meaning both you, my husband, and my son on the same day. But Rashi, you're close to the Joshua, there was really a reference to the fact that later the two boys would in fact be buried on the same day. Okay, very good. Last pasuk in the parak, 46. Vatoyim Rivka al Yitzchak. So now Rivka, now remember the background of our story. We're not going to spend so much time. I just wanted to finish up the story, because I really want to focus on the relations with Yaakov and Esav. And this is already now tangential to that. Rivka and her son Yaakov were involved in this whole conspiracy that Yitzchak doesn't know about. So now Yitzchak, who had been blinded by what was going on, wanted to give the blessings, gave the wrong blessings, and eventually uncovered what was going on, but now is again unaware of the hatred and animosity between the two boys. Rivka again is on the in the know, where Yitzchak is not. And what you find is we have this personal conversation between Rivka and her son Yaakov, in which she reveals to him, Esav wants to kill you. You got to get out of here. Go to my brother. Stay there. I'll call you when it's time. And now she goes back to her husband and gives him a different story, because she's still not comfortable telling him all that's going on, even after the brachas have been stolen, even after Yitzchak has come to this realization that the smell of Gan Eden came in with Yaakov and the wafting of Gehenim came in with Esav. And she still comes and says the following to him. Rivka says to her husband Yitzchak, Katzti b'chayai mipnei benos Ches, I am disgusted with my life on account of the daughters of Ches, which is where they lived. Im lokeach Yaakov isha mibnos Ches, if our son Yaakov were to take a wife from these girls, ke'elam ibnos ha'aretz loma lichayim, of what value is life to me? What do I need life? If this is who my son is going to marry, this, for this we spent all this time raising him, we have to send him to my brother, to Lavan, let him find a wife over there. And Yitzchak is therefore going to do that. He's going to summon Yaakov in the next pasuk. He's going to bless him, commanding him not to take a wife from the daughters of Canaan, but to go to Padan Aram, to the house of the Suyim, of his father. And then I really need to give the next sheet, because we're going to get to the next, so that last bracha, which we'll just need to see, the bracha of Abraham is then given at this point when he sends him off. Remember, we were missing the blessing of Abraham in the earlier blessings. That's going to come here in the next pasuk, where Yitzchak is going to say, may you be blessed with the blessing of Abraham as you go. And he sends him off on his way from there. One last point that I'll mention for today. You see here again, it's clear that Yaakov is not yet married. Now again, remember, the boys are how old?
60.
They're like 62 years old. I think we figured out exactly as to where they were up to. 62, Esav is married, he's a hunter, he has got wives, he's living in his own home. Yaakov is still living at home, 62, he's not married. So when we put this all together, that is a factor which will play into, if you were Yitzchak looking at this situation, exactly how to just play that in. But that's what we have her. She sends off her son Yaakov to go live with her brother. And we'll continue to finish this up, and we'll move forward. For those of you who do catch up online with this class, and if you access it through Torah Media Atlanta, you should be aware that Yisrael Killian, who runs Torah Media Atlanta, reached out because donations to that site are down. He does not make money off the site, but he does need money in order to run the site. Those of you who do take advantage of it, I would suggest making a donation online when you do use it, so that he can continue that site.